Christmas music that comes out of the Northwest. That's the Ventures with Sleigh Ride.
It's one of those. And the nice thing about the Ventures, generally speaking, is it's still like, so I get the benefit of having younger people on staff in the bar, and so I'm always hitting them up and nieces and nephews for what their playlists are, just because I'm curious. And the Ventures still pop up all the time. One of the few bands from actually, they kind of even predate me, but one of the few bands from, say, my very, very early childhood that still seems to surface a lot in soundtracks and in people's playlists.
So, Mike, what you're saying is people our age have ventured to this kind of music?
Nope. That's you saying it.
As the show progresses,
we need to connect him with Rachel. She's also a punster.
I'll go back and forth on email with puns on Rachel because it gives me a few minutes to think about it. Like written puns are much better because it gives you time to kind of really go esoteric
to craft it.
Well, it's the Thanksgiving at Home with Cairo Radio live holiday special. Bunch of people live on the radio on this special holiday, giving thanks to things like Northwest culture and history and all the great people that we get to work with here at Cairo Radio and the great listeners who make it all possible by buying as much as they can of all the products and services that are ever mentioned on our air. And I'm so grateful to people for doing that.
Exactly.
That's the only way it works. I tell people when they say, hey, I like what I hear. Buy whatever you hear advertised, buy it and tell them that you heard about it on Cairo Radio. So thanks for spending the afternoon with us here on Thanksgiving 2020. This is Thanksgiving at Home with Cairo Radio. It's Felix Bunnell and Mike Lewis. We've got an hour to go here. We've still got lots of stuff to get to. We talked about windstorms and big storms in the last hour. Now I want to talk about bridges. The Northwest is known for its iconic collapse of bridges. Before we get too deep into history on that, I say this as much as I can. The West Seattle Bridge, the big pain that it is for people who live in West Seattle, and I had to drive over there a few days ago and take that detour, which was crazy. I still think the city of Seattle, Department of Transportation, doesn't get enough credit for closing the bridge before it could collapse. I think that's a really cool thing that happened, that they shut it down when they noticed there were cracks and they moved to close it down.
I agree with you. I mean, I'm still kind of curious. The expected bridge life. What was it? Somebody said that it is the perfect millennial. It's 35 years old and doesn't work. The problem is that it was projected to be up a lot longer than it is, and that's to me. So yes, that's actually not on the bridge inspectors. Thank goodness they caught it when they caught it. I'd still like to get to the bottom of why this thing just didn't last so long. What was the miscalculation in the building that put it, you know, at risk so quickly?
Well, I mean, 35 years is a good long time if you compare it to the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. And wasn't that a great transition?
That was a very good transition.
You hear on weekday drive time radio.
Exactly.
Not holiday afternoon drive time radio. That's my specialty. It's like Holiday Inn. I'm here on holidays, and it's a little slower. It's not quite as sharp, not quite as political, not quite as, you know, in your face. You and I haven't been arguing about anything. We've been talking about these things.
Yeah, well, we're both pro working bridge. I think that we can agree on that.
Yes. Hashtag. So I did a story a couple weeks ago, and I found this great piece of audio. Cairo Radio, which, first went on the air back in 1935. We just celebrated our 85th birthday in October. Cairo Radio was a CBS affiliate in 1940. And when this big bridge, which had opened up to the public on the 1st of July, 1940, and right away had problems, it bounced around in the wind too much. It was clear pretty early on that something had gone wrong in the design. And there are several people who say that, you know, they could have told you exactly what was going to happen, what in fact did happen on November 7th, 1940, when the winds weren't even blowing that hard. It wasn't like it was a crazy storm, but the bridge, you know, it was closed to traffic and it disintegrated and fell apart. Cairo Radio put together a team and went down there and did a live broadcast from alongside the bridge. And they actually had a guy up in an airplane, a guy named Carol Foster, who reported live over the Cairo airwaves. And this was sent out over the whole CBS radio network in 1940. So we've got some pieces of audio about this incredible collapse. And then I think we're going to hear Carol Foster, who was a very popular Cairo personality on the morning Cairo's Time Clock Club in the 1940s, especially during World War II. Can we hear this Carol Foster describing what he's looking at from an airplane?
Yep, coming up.
From our vantage point, the roadway running up to each tower each 425-foot tower from the buttress, the land end buttresses of the bridge, are intact. The entire center span of the bridge over Puget Sound is out. And from our vantage point, it looks as though it were a toy bridge with 50 yards from each tower suspended over the sound and the very ends of it dragging like broken ribbons into the water.
You know, and there's very famous film of this bridge collapse that's been on YouTube forever. I mean, it's almost like you think YouTube was invented in 1940 to be able to show the film of the bridge collapsing. But the fact that there's this audio, which it's not a live description of it collapsing, obviously, but it's within a few hours of it having happened, and it's sent out nationwide by radio. I mean, this is just, I love that this artifact exists. It's very cool. I think we have a guy named Captain Bob Owens describing how the collapse went down.
The bridge at that time, the time I arrived, was swinging very wildly from side to side and also up and down. There was one car on the bridge and a truck loaded with lumber. And the car was bouncing. In fact, it left the deck of the bridge, turned over on its side. Then at 11:10, there was one big heave to the north and swung back to the south, and she began to break up.
I see, Bob. And how long after that before the whole 2,800-foot center span gave out?
Well, that was at the time. It was 11:10 when it all went in, Maury.
The whole thing went in 11:10, is that right?
That's right.
And nobody was hurt?
No one injured at all.
How did that fellow get off that was in his car out there on the bridge?
The last few hundred feet, he crawled off on his hands and knees.
Yeah, and that's the guy who crawled off on his hands and knees was a guy named Leonard Coatsworth, who worked for the News Tribune. And he left behind his old Studebaker, which was only a couple years old, I guess, and this dog named Tubby, who I think was a three-legged dog that belonged to his daughter or something, and they just couldn't get the dog out the back seat. The dog was terrified, and the dog was the only living creature that died in the collapse of the bridge.
Wow.
And, you know, Tacoma Narrows, you know, it was a, you know, a wonder when it opened in July of 1940 and eliminated the need for a ferry to cross Tacoma Narrows to get over from the Tacoma side over to the peninsula side of Puget Sound. And, you know, it only lasted for how many months is that? From July 1st to November 7th. That's what, about 7 months or something? And they didn't replace it with the new bridge until 1950. I mean, so they went from having this wonderful way to drive across for 7 months and then, you know, pretty soon, if the World War II starts and everything, and there's no money and no will to get that bridge replaced for 10 years, which is crazy. And the thing is that the cause of it collapsing, it was, you know, it's been debated in countless engineering classes. It's this sort of classic example of forensic engineering where you have this footage of the thing falling down. You have eyewitnesses. You have all this data since it was a brand new bridge. When it was bouncing up and down earlier that summer, they had made some modifications to it with cables and to try to kind of, you know, almost like a bucking bronco or galloping Gertie is what they called it. But they did all this stuff to try to address the problem, kind of reverse engineer and fix what had gone wrong. But this tape from 1940, this guy, engineer named C.E. Andrews, he pretty much nailed the cause right away.
We have had much higher winds than this that occurred today, but it's the particular type of wind that caused the vibration that caused the failure. And I think that it's due entirely to the use of solid web girders as stiffening trusses instead of the usual open type girder that is usually used on suspension bridges.
Yeah, so it was like a sail. Instead of having, you know, like narrow girders that were strong and that created a framework, it had solid sort of wall of girders, and that just caught the wind and it just shook apart because the wind was, you know, it was just this harmonic dissonance of the wind hitting this thing and moving it back and forth, and it was just too much for it, and the thing just, it just was no match for the wind. You know, when I think about wind, when I hear about wind, I hear about things like storms that blow bridges down or just regular winds that blow bridges, I always think about Nick Allard. And I would love to know if Nick is with us and can tell us how he is celebrating Thanksgiving in his windy part of the world. Are you there, Nick? Come in, Nick. This is Carol Foster, high above the Narrows Bridge. I don't think Nick can hear us.
I don't think Nick can hear us either.
Oh, well. I think he cleared his throat. That was exciting.
So actually, can we get back to the bridge for just a moment?
Yeah, let's go back to the Narrows Bridge. Sure.
So while we're waiting on Nick, the one of the things about the Narrows Bridge also is It is. So I don't know if you remember, this is in 81, and you wouldn't have been, obviously, a lot of people don't remember this, but it's actually one of those things that also, when you said it's been picked over in engineering school, this is another one of those, and it was the Hyatt Regency, the walkway collapse in Kansas City.
Oh, I remember that. The T-dance. Yeah.
Exactly. Very good. And that one killed, I think, 100-something people, 120 people, 114 people. And But the reason is, and it's a little bit like this, that like every now and then there is an engineering effect. There is a movement effect that is not calibrated by the engineers. And in this particular case, it was fine for supporting the weight. It wasn't fine for the resonant vibration of dancing, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they hadn't calculated into this. And that's why it collapsed and injured 200 people and killed. I mean, it's one of the worst collapse disasters we've had in the United States. Because everybody had gathered, I think, for a holiday party, if I remember correctly. And so the Tacoma Narrows Bridge is along that same lines, that it was just, they calculated for everything except that one thing that didn't happen all the time, but obviously it just needed to happen once.
Yeah. And, you know, there's such a long tradition here now of these bridge failures, both, you know, catastrophic, otherwise, very little in the way of loss of life here. I mean, if you think Narrows, a poor tubby, of course, God rest his soul. But in 1979, when the Hood Canal Bridge blew down, or half of it sank in a windstorm, it had been closed to traffic, so nobody was injured in that. And then in...
floating bridges, right?
Yeah, 1990, when the old Mercer Island floating bridge, when it opened either the same day or a day after the Narrows Bridge in 1940, it was closed to traffic. That was like 30 years ago yesterday, I think. Yeah, it was closed to traffic, and they were... doing a process called hydro demolition, using high pressure water jets to chip off the old concrete surface. And that concrete surface, of course, had oil and like lead from gasoline that had been, you know, dripped onto it for 45 years at that point, 50 years, I guess. And then so they couldn't just pump all that wastewater right into Lake Washington. And so they used the floating pontoons of the bridge. They used those as wastewater storage.
Wow.
Yeah, they cut holes in the side of the pontoons to have access to be able to pump the water into it. And they had, you know, there was alarms and things. There were sort of like those sort of bilge switches, or switches that were supposed to kind of switch on bilge pumps and let the engineers know when something went wrong. But we had a windstorm. It was 1990. It was late November of 1990. Over the Thanksgiving weekend, I think on a Sunday, the bridge started taking on water. And once it started taking on water, there was nothing they could do. They just sort of watched it, you know, twist apart and sink. We had a traffic reporter for Cairo Radio, who's now deceased, a guy named Paul Brendel. And somehow or other, they got him up in the air, and he was over it, describing it as it's falling. And at one point, he said something like, he sounded like almost like Edward R. Murrow describing, you know, some sort of poetic thing in a bombing in London. He said, like, and, you know, that one will tip and fall into Lake Washington. It looks like a giant battleship rolling over. It was brilliant. I think Cairo got an Edward R. Murrow award for its coverage of the sinking of the Lacey V. Murrow Bridge.
Wow.
So they got an award named for one guy, for the sinking of a bridge, named for the guy's brother.
Wow, is just like, that is kind of funny.
When's that ever going to happen again? Do we have that Dave Ross song that he did?
Yes, we do.
Give
us the context to this.
Yeah, so back in 1990, when that bridge sank, Dave Ross was doing parody songs for his show at least once or twice, maybe a couple times a month. He would do songs about current events and things. And he took Gordon Lightfoot's, you know, Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, that popular song from 1975, and he reworked the lyrics and came up with the Wreck of the Lacey V. Murrow. And it's just brilliant. So that he recorded it probably, I don't know, what was that, 30 years ago, I guess.
All right.
So five years ago for the anniversary, we got a live band on Seattle's Morning News. I think we're the only news radio program in the morning that often has live musicians in performing. And we had like a piano player and a guy playing some percussion instrument and a guitarist. And Dave sang it live to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the bridge sinking, because it's just such a great parody. Let's hear that song and then we'll come back. Let's hear, it's pretty short, I think. Let's hear Dave's version of Wreck of the Lacey V. Murrow from 2015.
It was a straight concrete line, the first of its kind. And the folks on the east side were smiling. And thousands arrived for the 5-minute drive from Seattle to old Mercer Island. With each passing year, many more cars appeared, and the old bridge became much too narrow. So a second was built, and construction crews drilled little holes in the lacy marrow. Just little holes to hold the construction runoff temporarily. What could go wrong? It rained night and noon on the aging pontoons, and they used every pump they could borrow. But Lake Washington's tide found the holes in the side and swallowed the Lacey V. Monroe. And thousands drove by as the bridge took its dive, and they saw Mother Nature's great powers. And on the east side, all the stockbrokers cried. Their commute changed from minutes to hours. I remember the Narrows, I recall Hood Canal, and the Puget Sound, the weather that got them. And one of these days, we'll come up with a way to keep these damn things off the bottom.
That's pretty great. I had never heard that before.
What I like about working with Dave is, you know, about, I don't know, 2 weeks before that, back in 2015, I said, hey, Dave, you know, the 25th anniversary is coming up. What if we did your parody song live? He's like, sure. He's just like, he says yes to goofy things.
And he's also good at the top of a hat. You know, he's not a guy who even needs to practice, I think.
Yeah, well, we did rehearse that. We rehearsed that at about 5:45 in the morning in one of the other secondary studios there down the hall from the main studio. But, no, I love what we do on the morning news. We get to do lots of fun stuff and not just focus on headlines and stuff. We get to mix it up a little bit with stuff like that. So, and, you know, he actually mentions the Hood Canal Bridge, and he mentions the Narrows in that song as well. One other bridge collapse I forgot to mention was the Skagit River Bridge when the I-5
Oh, right.
That's actually
a very important one.
Yeah, a couple people were hurt, I think, but nobody was hurt seriously, and nobody was killed, although there was a state trooper that died in one of the traffic jams in the weeks after it, and they're directing traffic
onto
a detour through Mount Vernon and everything. Yeah, so that wasn't without some loss of life, but I don't know. It's amazing what the perspective of time can do to all these tragedies, engineering tragedies, and I do hope that the West Seattle thing will get sorted out before. How weird that the West Seattle Bridge and the pandemic thing is kind of happening at the same time, so you have this sort of...
I think it's actually a tremendous benefit, right? I mean, if this had happened at a time where we weren't already switching over to working from home, I mean, it could not, you could not have found a, it's hard. And I'm not, and I'm not minimizing. I've got friends in West Seattle that, of course, I'd never see anymore, but I've got friends in West Seattle. And I know how hard it is and how inconvenient it is to have to make the, essentially you've become sort of North Tacoma, right? Because you have to literally do this grand loop to get over here or get a jet ski. And so I'm not minimizing that, but it really did. If we had not been switching to working from home for many people, it wouldn't have been far worse and far more catastrophic from a traffic standpoint than it has been. And it already has been awfully bad for a whole bunch of people.
Well, traffic jams are good because you can listen to your radio longer because you have nothing else to do, and it's a nice way to be kept company. So, but fortunately, the traffic's been so light and so bizarre, it's hard to imagine what 2021 will bring. But anyway, after the news here in a few minutes, we're going to dip into a couple more local holiday songs, some snippets from some other local artists who you might not have heard of before, or maybe you didn't know they did some Christmas songs. We've got another half hour to go here on the big Thanksgiving at Home with Kyra Radio. I'm Felix Bunnell, and it's Mike Lewis is with me. Thanks for listening. Thanksgiving Day. The big Thanksgiving at Home with Kyra Radio Holiday Special. Radio doesn't do very many specials. I kind of like that we're getting to do a special. It's like that, remember that sound when they'd play on CBS before one of the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer specials would come on? Or
exactly.
Charlie Brown, that boom, 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 that weird trumpet.
Well, but also that was back in the day when, and I got to say, I never thought I would get nostalgic about this. But I'm nostalgic about the fact that TV ended at night, right? When it would just shut off, and then it would like play Stars and Stripes Forever, or you just get a, you know, the snow, or you'd get some sort of like holding signal, and TV actually turned off. People are going to be shocked to hear this, who maybe are younger, but it did. It just stopped. And then you would get this wave of, wow, I'm up late and loneliness. And then you'd go to bed, or you'd read, or you'd do something else with your time. But there was no TV to be had unless you had, and this is pre, you know, cassette, VHS cassettes. And so it was just done. They'd shut it off. It was like, I don't know, like having oxygen pulled out of the room, but in a very good way.
Yeah, but we expected it. So we didn't know what we were missing. I liked on, I think it was Como TV at about 2 o'clock or whenever the foremost movie would end.
Right.
They'd show a slide, like a still would say, that said like night final. And there'd be some booth announcer reading teletype copy of national and international news stories for, I don't know, 15 minutes or something. It was like a radio newscast on TV with just this static night final slide. I for some reason, I don't know, I was pretty young, but I was up. My parents let me stay up late and watch TV, I guess, a lot. But I listened to far too many of those night final news reports in the middle
of
the night.
Why you ended up as a historian, Felix. If they had just made you go to bed earlier, you could have done something with your life.
Well, that whole notion of like sort of that organic, you know, cage-free media where you're just like you're at the whims of the programmers, where you look in the TV guide to see, oh, what's the late movie tonight on
the
channel
TV guide.
4? And oh, I'm going to stay up late and watch that. And that idea of being able to schedule when you watch a film, I mean, that's such a radical shift.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
I remember like in the early 80s when, you know, we would rent a VCR. And like you drag the big thing home and have to plug it into your TV and figure out, like, connect it through the Atari box thing. And because, you know, I don't think we got our first VCR till 1983 or something like that.
I don't think we got ours until like 80, maybe 83, 84. And ours was, get it, a Betamax, of course. So that meant we could rent.
Oh,
when we
wow.
finally did make that big leap into semi-modern technology, we had like 7 films in the country we could rent, and that were actually on Betamax format.
But the picture quality was so good.
Yeah, we could brag about how great we could see the same movie all the time.
Yeah. Our first VCR was an Emerson, and it had a cable remote. Like the remote was like on a wire. You couldn't. That was great. Anyway, all right. Well, it is the last half hour of the big Thanksgiving holiday special here on Cairo Radio. We've got a couple more local artists, holiday music cuts we want to get to, just because, you know, Bing Crosby gets all the attention for being born in Tacoma, raised in Spokane, being, you know, Mr. White Christmas and everything. And, you know, he's well-deserved, of course. But there's all these other local artists who've put out Christmas records, mostly back in the 60s. I mean, most of the good Christmas records, I think, came out between about, 1940 and 1965 or so. And so this first track, iconic Seattle musician, guitarist, you know, hero, dead at age 27, an amazing, amazing, talented guy. But one day, apparently, in a studio in London, he was noodling around on his guitar playing a little bit of Drummer Boy. Do we have this little Jimi Hendrix cut? You know,
that's fantastic.
You can't see yourself like playing that over and over again and like everyone, you know, kind of singing along, or I don't know what you do along to that song, just sort of kind of just grooving along,
well,
I guess.
And
but
the other thing
it is cool that it was caught on tape.
Absolutely. And the other thing that's sad about that makes always, I mean, obviously Hendrix dying at 27 is going to be remain perpetually sad. But also that they have literally scraped every single time he sat down. You knew what you think as a remember when the thing about they found a bunch of Hemingway short stories that somebody had and a family had acquired somehow, and they were going to publish them. And then the family actually, no, somebody else had acquired them. The family sued and said, hey, he didn't want to publish these. He didn't even like these stories. Like, these were the ones he felt were junk. And I feel like that with Hendrix. Like, every time Hendrix went in the studio now, someone has put together this, you know, outtakes and collections on, because there was so, there was a, he did a lot for the length of time he was on the planet. But even so, people are so desperate to hear more of it that things like the Drummer Boy, you know, get sort of this weird shelf life. But I still have to say, it's kind of cool to listen to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And from that same era of Jimi Hendrix, was there was a local record label called Etiquette Records. It was the home of a band, the Sonics. It was the home of the
Sonics,
band, the Wailers. These great local bands sort of invented this kind of raw, rough and ready, just stuff that would later come to be called grunge, or stuff that would, that grunge would descend from. It was all being invented in the mid-1960s. But a lot of it had, you know, great melodies and great harmonies and stuff. And so Etiquette put out a Christmas record in 1965 with their stable of artists. And there's a bunch of great songs there that the Sonics do, some amazing, amazing song called Santa Claus, and another one called, like, the Jingle Bells Village Idiot version that's just as bizarre and definitely worth hearing. But one of my favorite songs on there, I mean, if some bigger artist had done this song, I could see it being like in the canon of Christmas music. It's called She's Coming Home. And the topic, it's like a guy singing about his girlfriend who goes off to college and is coming home for Christmas. And it's a great topic. Let's hear this little bit of the Wailers with She's Coming Home.
Kids are every day till she has to go away. Wishing she wouldn't have to go. Oh, can you see what a merry Christmas this will be? It's vacation time. She's coming home to me.
I mean, who could sing that? Mariah Carey? What would be the? I've always started to wonder what would the best modern artist to reboot that Wailer "She's Coming Home" Christmas song would be. And I don't have a good answer.
Well,
for
it's
that.
It's got a nice harmony, so I think a lot of people could. Could actually do it well. But when you were talking about Christmas music earlier, I was thinking about this, and I didn't realize this until I read, I think Rolling Stone did a big story on the fact that the reason that all of these artists do Christmas music is because it sells enormously well. Some people, they all know that they can, one, they didn't have to write a single song. Two, they frequently don't owe royalties depending on how old the song is. And every single time that somebody does a Christmas album, they make money on it. So this is why virtually everyone, I mean, there's probably the Sex Pistols Christmas out there somewhere because everyone makes money on the Christmas music. And so they're always encouraged to, like, grab a bunch of Christmas standards and record them. And I think one of the greatest selling albums of all time is still Mariah Carey's Christmas album.
I think you're right. Yeah. And of course, White Christmas is still the number one selling single, I think, of all time.
Right.
Yeah. Let's one last quick one before we get to the break here. I want to hear Cary Grant, who's an honorary Northwesterner because he married Diane Cannon, who grew up in West Seattle. This is him, Cary Grant, with Christmas Lullaby, one of the weirdest Christmas songs you'll ever hear.
You awake to dancing toys, candy canes, Christmas joys. And I pray your whole life through, angels will watch over you, loving you the way I do.
Is he singing or is he talking? I can't tell.
Sleep well.
He's kind of sing-talking. It's okay. It's Cary Grant. He can get away with it. So
fair enough.
Plenty more songs. We'll do another show sometime. Maybe closer to Christmas, we'll play some more. Play even the full-length cuts, including these songs, and some more Stan Morrison, too, if we can get away with it. So coming up, send us a text. Let us know.
Tell
us what you're doing for Thanksgiving. Share your Thanksgiving memories. 98973. It's Kyra Radio's Home for Thanksgiving with Felix Bunnell and Mike Lewis.
I always love this song. This is a song that actually inspires you to want to learn how to play guitar. That's a good song.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about it is, like a lot of Pink Floyd's music, their music was so well produced and structured that it always sounds modern. It never sounds like a real period piece, right? I mean, like, you listen to The Doors and it sounds very much from its era. But but Pink Floyd doesn't tend to do that. So we've got quite a few texts that have come in. if you don't mind, I'm going to go through at least a couple of them here, Felix.
Yeah, yeah.
Some very nice ones. And so, folks, thank you for listening, because you've been really sweet about the fact that Felix, who gets all the credit for organizing this show, and of course we got Tarek and Paul.
Paul.
I just said completely because I've...
Guess what Paul's last name is, by the way.
Guess what his last name is?
Yeah.
I probably got it on it.
McCartney. He's one of the Beatles.
Oh, there
no,
you
I'm
go.
Just kidding.
So anyway, so thank you, folks, for texting in and letting us know how you felt about the show. Thanks for working tonight, guys. There's from 45 enjoying the show. Someone else, I love the Felix and Mike show. I am working for top billing at some point, but at this point, I'm still learning from the master. So it's a Felix and Mike show, not the Mike and Felix show. So someone actually said, well, so we got sort of a mild thank you and not bad, guys. And I like that as well, because I think, you know, if I could actually do most of my things in life at a not bad standard, I'd take that. That'd actually be a big step up for me. And also, when we got this text from somebody from 360 saying Don's daughter, and I'm assuming he's referring to a member of the Ventures.
Yeah, Don Wilson. I think that's the person that person texted earlier, and their wife, I might be getting this wrong, their wife is somehow related to Don Wilson's grandson. I mean, Don's lived in this area for a long time, so they're part of Don Wilson's family. Yeah.
Ah, got you there. So there you go. So that's it. Thank you, folks. So the text messages have been really delightful, and it's nice to know. Sometimes you're here and sitting here in this. I'm in the studio. Felix is at home, and you get a little bit isolated and not knowing who is out there and what they're thinking about and doing. So we really appreciate you guys getting in touch.
Yeah, and I was able to run upstairs in the last break and check on the potatoes. Potatoes, I just turned them off, so they're going to be ready to mash as soon as I'm done here with the show. I have one text. I found this text really touching. It's from 425. It says, "Thank you guys for being there live today. I don't feel quite so lonely. Fun show."
Yeah, thank you. That's really sweet.
Radio. I mean, I get all in the weeds about radio history, and I love how radical radio was in the 1920s when people could be hundreds of miles away and listen to something happening live from far away. It must have been mind blowing at the time. And the BBC became famous in the late 20s and early 30s for doing these incredible Christmas programs where they would connect with other broadcast facilities in other parts of the world by shortwave. They kind of circle the empire, like they have people in Australia and Canada and, I don't know, South Africa. I mean, not South Africa. I'm probably getting that wrong. But they basically sort of circled the globe, hearing from members of the British Empire describing how they were celebrating the holidays. And then it would end with the king giving, the king's regular annual Christmas message. And so it was just this incredible way of packaging up this sort of global connection between people. And there were debates in the 20s, like, shouldn't the BBC shut down on Christmas Day? Because, you know, those BBC employees, they should be with their families. But the argument that won out was the fact that those people who are either shut-ins or, you know, living by themselves for whatever reason, or somehow are isolated in some, you know, thatched hut somewhere in Cornwall or something, for those people, radio is this incredible lifeline to hear stuff going on live and Christmas music and Christmas plays and just a human voice live on the other end of the microphone coming through the speaker. Maybe I'm just goofy, but I still think that's just pretty amazing. The fact that I'm in my basement in Wallingford, you're down there on East Lake, and who knows, maybe two dozen people are listening to the show right now, most of whom I'm related to. That's pretty amazing.
Well, and the funny thing that you said, because I don't think so, I'm relatively new to radio. It's been 4 years, roughly speaking. And that's when I came here. I just mostly worked as a reporter. I'd come on the shows from time to time, and then gradually I started doing a little bit more work, and now I'm on Cairo Nights. But I did not appreciate, even though I was on the receiving end of it, because I always loved listening to radio, I did not appreciate how personal the relationship is when you actually have someone's voice inside your kitchen or inside in your shop where you're working or in your living room or in your car. And it never really got clear to me till I started seeing how angry they get if you know, because I was on the receiving end when the Ron and Don show was ended by Cairo, and then I was put in the show that replaced it, which then got also ended by Cairo, and that was, people were understandably very unhappy, and they sort of point that fire hose of anger right at you because you're the replacement. You're the person sitting in the chair now. But the thing that you can pull from it that's positive is like how personal that relationship actually is. And that's something that caught me a little bit off guard, but it makes complete sense.
And that's why I love it. I mean, it's TV, you know, the idea of TV is so phony because someone's sitting there like wearing a suit and there's a big picture behind their head of what they're talking about or whatever. Nobody does that in a real conversation. Good radio is just eavesdropping on people who like each other talking about things that are interesting. And that's, if you can pull that off, that's, you know, I could listen to that all day.
So. I completely agree.
Anyway, I'm really grateful to Cairo for letting us do this big Thanksgiving show and for everyone who sent in texts and for all those great Northwest artists who put together those fabulous albums going back. I went to the 1950s. Everyone who's listened today, have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for being Cairo listeners. We love you guys. We know how lucky we are to have your attention, to have your trust. We do everything we can to kind of keep you entertained and keep you in touch with what's going on in Seattle and around the Puget Sound. So it's been a weird year. It's a complete understatement, I know. And I know things are getting better. We're not rounding a corner. I'm not going to use that phrase. But things are getting better, and 2021 is going to be all about sort of a big recovery. So we'll be here for that, too. Cairo Radio has been here since 1935. We'll be here well into the future. I'd love to do something like this closer to Christmas, too. We'll see if I can twist some programming arms and let me spend a few hours in my basement in or around Christmas.
Count me in.
253 actually had a text about that. They said that you two are better than the usual CBS holiday programming. So thank you for that, 253.
Don't tell Major Garrett there. He's got a big ego. It'll hurt his feelings if they don't play in the Major Garrett podcast. I forget what it's called. But anyway, now we got one more Northwest artist we're going to pay tribute to as we're getting out of the show here. He's sort of a Northwesterner by adoption. Burl Ives moved to Anacortes. I think that's where he passed away. I think it's been 20 years. Do we have this little cut from, can we head out with Burl Ives giving us a holly jolly Christmas for everyone, all the Cairo listeners? And this is lifted right from the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer soundtrack.
It's so early for Christmas music.
It's Thanksgiving.
I know.
I'm going to go and put my Christmas lights up. As soon as I get this turkey dinner wolf down, I'm going to go put my Christmas lights up.
Although I do like Burl Ives.
6 hours to go until Christmas time music is in full swing, I feel like.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. No. Hey, thanks, everybody. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, thank
thanks,
you
Paul
very
Holden.
Much
thanks,
for joining
Tarek.
Us.
I'm sorry. Thanks, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. Is there one for me? Have a holly jolly Christmas. And in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year. And in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas. Yeah.